Magic can sometimes seem exotic and mysterious, hidden in the far-flung lands and in dusty books.
Some of it's right here with us, in the church aisles, the graveyard, even at our kitchen tables. With roots in African sorcery, folk Christianity, native lore, and European magic, the tradition known as hoodoo, conjure, and root work is distinctly American.
And we have dedicated ourselves to the preservation and practice of this living tradition. I'm Dean, a Chicagoland spiritualist and root worker.
And I'm Dr. Hobb, a two-headed Southern country.
And this is Lamplighter Blues.
I'm sitting here broke, and I ain't got a dime. You all could put something in these dukes of mine, but don't put that thing on me.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be talking about home magic. We're going to talk about work you can do in and around the house for the benefit of your home and your family, for your protection and well-being. But before we get into the topic at hand, we have a little bit of news to cover.
Yes, and first and foremost, we want to get to our contest. Thanks for everybody who liked our page and shared our links and things. It was awesome to see that kind of response, and it does help us out quite a bit, especially being able to be searched. It was kind of neat that we were able to be found kind of high up high now on the Google. But our contest winners are Kay, who decided to take us up on the books, April, who decided on the reading, and Christine, who we'll be mailing the oils to. So thanks for everybody who submitted their entry.
Right. We've already contacted all the winners. We'll do our best to get the things that are being mailed out, and hopefully April has received her reading. If you hear this and you have not received it, do let me know, because I'm pretty sure I sent it to you a good little while back. So if you've not received it already, do get in touch with me, either through the show's email address, or you can contact me privately either way, and make sure that you receive that.
Right. And for the actual physical prizes, they're going to be mailed sometime later this week. So if you don't have them, it's because they haven't been sent yet.
Right. We'll drop you an email when those ship out so that you can kind of keep an eye out for them.
Yes, absolutely. Other than that, we also wanted to talk a little bit about our New Orleans trip coming up.
Right. This year, Corey from New World Witchery is in charge of this year's manifestation of what has been the Pagan Podcaster Supermoot. This year is the Magical Media Conference. He's expanded it out to include some podcasters sort of outside the pagan community, as well as bloggers and other type of media personalities. And this year's meeting, like Dean said, is in New Orleans, Louisiana. It is the weekend of November 8th, 9th, and 10th. I think I got those dates right.
Well, we'll look them up and post them on show notes.
I think I got the dates right, but we'll post them for sure so people can know. Saturday afternoon from 11 until around 1-ish will be the actual meet and greets. We will be at Urzuli's in the French Quarter. If I remember correctly, it is at Royal and St. Anne. I'll double check the address and post it up. That'll be the day we'll be available for anyone to come by, complain, shake our hands, whatever it is they want to do. We'll be available to talk to people. I mean, if you're in the southern United States and you want to have an excuse to drive to New Orleans, we will be there and we will be happy to meet you. I know Corey will be there. Corey and Lane both, I think, will be there for New World Witchery. Dean and I are intending to be there, barring any unforeseen circumstances. Mm-hmm. I believe Velma Nightshade will be in attendance. I believe that Jen Rue from the excellent Rue and Hyssop blog will be in attendance. Peter Padden and his wife Linda from Pendrag Publishing, the Crooked Path podcast, I think, will be in attendance.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of folks, and I believe Corey will have the people who are for sure attending be posted somewhere soon.
I'm pretty sure everybody I mentioned has pretty well. Kathleen Borealis, I believe, is soon to be there from Borealis Meditations. All those people, I'm pretty sure, have solidly agreed to be there. Scarlett from Lakefront Pagan Voice. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm missing somebody, but that's a pretty solid list.
Yeah. Definitely a lot of good podcasters, some cool people to meet, and especially with the amount of people who are cardomancers coming down there, it might be an interesting time to get your cards read.
Sure, and it's certainly a city where you can get your cards read.
Yeah.
All you do is wander to Jackson Square and you'll sure find a card reader or 12. But New Orleans is a great city. I've been going off and on since I was a teenager. I don't believe you've ever been, right?
I have never been.
So this will be your first trip down, and it's a nice place, and I'm looking forward to going back. I'm looking forward to hopefully getting to meet some people, both fellow podcasters and bloggers, and of course any fans who are present. We would certainly love to see you there.
Absolutely. All right, well, with that, we hope to see you guys there, but let's get on to our main topic. All right. What we wanted to talk to today was home magic, things that can be done in and around your house. We're going to try to focus this into three different groups, give or take. Stuff that's done outside your house, stuff that's done on your porch or in your entryway, and stuff that's done inside your house. So to start us off with is a couple of things that are traditionally buried in your front yard, usually either by your foundation or in a pathway. If someone was to walk up to your house, they would have to cross over these things.
Sure, and this comes back to sort of it sort of touches on foot track magic when you think of foot track, where you'll bury things for people to come in contact with, and these are largely what we're talking about as far as burying things here are apotropaic charms. These are protective charms that are meant to keep those who do you harm away, whether it's physical harm, supernatural type things, or whatever.
Right, and a good deal of this, as you were saying, with foot track magic is basically contagious magic. The person who you're trying to affect has to either walk through it or come into contact with it in some way, shape, or form.
Sure, and some of what we're talking about doesn't necessarily fall into that category, but it brushes up against it the same way, is that you're actually physically deploying an object that will have an effect. And there are a lot of different works, especially protecting works, that involve burying something. That's kind of thing you see come up a lot in a lot of different traditions, and hoodoo is no exception, and I'm sure a lot of it is taken from other cultures. You'll find this, if you follow these trails back, you'll find the beginnings of these practices all over Africa, Europe. This is just stuff that we picked up that's continued to be used.
Right. It's also kind of interesting, too. If you spend enough time around certain workers, you'll notice that almost all of us have a trowel in our car.
This is not an untrue statement. The trowel, I picked up a nice folding trowel not long ago that I like a lot. It fits in my pack. I don't have to worry about it looking quite so obvious.
And I really wanted to get one of those, and I went back to Psy Plus, and they did not have them anymore.
Oh, well, that's what you get. Hesitating will screw you up every time.
Yeah, should have jumped on it. Something again. Well, I'll see if I can find a picture of it to put in our show notes. But if you do a lot of work like this, where you have to kind of bury things on the fly, that thing is incredible.
Well, I'll snap a picture of mine. It's not a big deal, and put it
there.
Up.
We go.
It lives in the pack that leaves the house with me every time I go anywhere. You know, my trowel, Ziploc bags, holy water, string, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
the first item we're talking about reminds me of another tool I'd like to keep around, which is one of those, I forget what they're called, but those jobbies you use to plant seeds, the little metal spikes you use to punch seed holes. Because one of the first things we will talk about, which is very, very commonly buried for protection, are devil shoestrings. And the devil shoestrings we've talked about briefly before, I think we mentioned them during one of the Curio shows, we're talking about silver dimes, because those two objects are used in concert a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
The devil shoestring is a dried root. It looks like a twig. It looks like a stick when you see it, but it is a dried root. And it is called the devil shoestring. It's also called hobble bush because it's believed to trip the devil up.
And if you actually get a chance to look at this, we'll try to find you a picture. The solid part of the root, the real thickest part, will have these tiny little branches that will come off of it, and they're real thin, and they look like string almost.
Yeah, and they're in different thicknesses. You'll find them really, really thin and wispy, like string. You'll find them thicker, like I said, look like almost just like twigs or little bits of a tree branch or something.
Mm-hmm.
They are not hard to use. They're not hard to find, as near as I can tell.
Right, and if anyone's looking for this as well, a lot of metaphysical stores will carry devil shoestrings. And if you're not looking for the solid type, because the way that we were going to use them or explain to use them now is to use larger pieces, things that are about the size of your index finger or pinky. But if you're looking for it cut and sifted, you can find it under cramp bark, because a lot more stores will carry that than they will devil shoestrings whole.
Right. You know, like I said, what we're talking about is actually planting them upright in the ground. And they won't be visible. You'll actually bury them completely out of sight. But they're pointed, you know, towards the sky. You'll bury them upright like fence posts. And this is a very, very common way of protecting your home. I usually dress them with fiery wallet protection, or you can use this protection oil if you're feeling not quite so stern. And traditionally, if you can do it, you'll actually bury them in usually in nines, and you'll plant them across the path to your house. You know, say you had a dirt or gravel path leading to your house, that'd be much simpler to do. You'd actually bore your holes, plant them upright across the path, so they actually create a boundary. For a lot of modern situations, we can't do that. If you have concrete sidewalks or pathways leading to the house, there's no way to do that. So you can bury them to either side. If I had to do it around a sidewalk, I usually do it to either side, or just as close to the path as you can, the primary path leading to the house. I tend to water them with holy water once I plant them. This is something I picked up somewhere that I like a great deal. It works for me. But you do want to kind of dress them and plant them in nines. I do stick with that. I tend to stick with that tradition, and it tends to work fairly well.
Yeah, it seems like whenever you're working with double shoestrings, you always use them in sets of nine.
It seems to be. It seems to be how I've most of the material you come across, where they're used, it does seem to be used in multiples. The bearing, that is almost purely a barrier. It's not really, it's a repelling. It's meant to kind of push things away. More aggressively, you'll find things like bearing a knife, blade out, pointed towards the walkway. You'll take a new knife and dress the blade with fiery wall the same way. Just one of those situations where the 91st Psalm is usually employed. Mm-hmm. And it'll actually be buried flat where the point is directed towards their pathway, and that's a little slightly more aggressive practice with a very similar intent, which is to repel sort of invaders, things that would come in that don't belong.
Yeah, cut spells that are thrown at you too.
Mm-hmm. And those are that's really just, even using the knife, that's just the top of it. There's dozens of ways to even just use a knife like that, in concert with strong trees on your property or other landmarks and things like that. It's a really, really wide range of things you can do.
And while we're thinking on this too, if you live in an apartment, which comes up quite a bit, you know, I've got an apartment building, I don't want to be digging out where there's 40 to 50 people that live there. You can do a lot of this stuff by getting a planted pot that you leave by your door. And burying these things again to make a kind of barrier. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come back to potted plants before the show is over. There's a lot of ways, things that you dispose of in a yard that you can do in a potted plant around your house if you live in an apartment or just don't have any kind of yard.
Right. So the next thing on our list is Red Devil Eye, which is kind of a neat old trick. Trying to find these boxes anymore, unless you can dig them up at an antique place, and even then I'd be impressed the kind of condition that those boxes might be in. But
I'm pretty sure Red Devil Eye has gone the way of the buffalo, unfortunately.
Yeah.
it's an old-fashioned product. We mention it, I guess, as a historical note as much as anything else.
Absolutely.
But it was traditionally used, and again, this comes back to sort of the like fights like. This comes back to the idea of using scary guardians, sort of the gargoyle concept you'll find. And these boxes of lye, I mean, the brand was Red Devil Eye, and they had a red devil on the carton.
Right, and so if you were going to deploy this, you would dig a hole near the four corners of your house and place these boxes with the devil eyes pointed outward, so you had four different guardians around your house watching from each direction.
Right, and that's sort of an old-timey charm. That's when people still bought lye when they were making soap and things at home. And unfortunately, like I said, it's just not a product you can find anymore. It's one of those products that's gone out of style, and it's mentioned as a curiosity as much as anything else.
Right. Well, I mean, that's sort of partly what we're coming with the show to just kind of put that out there, that we're going to talk about a lot of things that you may not be able to get your hands on anymore, but it's part of the history, it's part of the tradition, so it's definitely worth knowing.
Absolutely. When we forget about it, that's how things go away. And then when you forget it, it's easy to discard the things that you can't use anymore, and it's just easy to follow with the things you can. We start making substitutions for things we don't have to substitute for. That's how things get lost.
Right. So, got anything more on that?
No, again, that one is an anachronism. It's very, very interesting. But again, if you come across the boxes, I'm not sure I'd bury one if I were to find it. So,
Well, how about salt?
Well, salt. I think we've talked about salt before in passing, at least in passing, because it's a pretty important thing.
Right.
Salt in all of its forms can be used for lots and lots of different things. There's a saying in Hoodoo that salt does what you tell it to do. Salt can be trained. Salt can be instructed. It could be used for beneficial work, it could be used for heavy work, and it could certainly be used for protection. I like kosher a lot of the time, especially for protection work. I just fond of it. It's easy to handle, it's easy to work with, and it's a pure salt.
And it's been blessed by a rabbi, so you got that going for you, too.
Doesn't hurt. But I like it mostly because it is a pure salt. You have things like table salt, of course, have iodine added to it. There was a reason for that back in the day, you know, but I don't worry too much about goiters, so I don't buy table salt, so... sea salt, rock salt, and kosher are all pure salts. For protection work, I like kosher. It's easy, like I said, it's easy to handle, it's easy to get a hold of, it's easy to work with. Salt, in the case of that way, is a protective item. It can be used to seal doorways, it can be used to seal windows. Pinches, I use pinches of mostly inside. I don't use it out in the yard as much as I do at liminal spaces. Just because I don't want to, like, kill anything.
Right. salting your garden and things might be a bad idea.
can be injurious to some plants, depending on the concentration you put out.
Right.
But salt can certainly be used at doorways and windows, and under if you have a raised porch, under steps, things like that, it can be very, very handy. You could five-spot your house. Salt can be one of the things you could use to five-spot, spot at each corner if you can get under the house, or a pinch inside, even in a packet, underneath a piece of furniture or something to make the fifth spot, or a cellar, if you have a cellar.
Yep, cellar crawl space is always good. Otherwise, you can put it in your basement, put it up in like a rafter or something, so it's sort of level with the rest of the ground.
Sure. We don't have a lot of cellars where I'm at, so I don't think about basements and cellars as much. You're not too far above sea level. Cellars tend to be right out, tend to hit water.
So. Gotcha.
So I don't think about basements as often as I should.
Well, yeah, we still have basement country, even though, you know, we built on a swamp.
Well, that's good, I suppose.
Well, and in that same vein, too, red brick dust is something that we'd also use in those types of spaces where you can draw a line of it across either a window or a doorway in order to keep tricks out and keep things at bay.
Right, and not quite as versatile as salt, in that you can train it to do other things, but red brick does have other uses besides just protective purposes, but it does make a really good repellent for things you don't necessarily want around. And you'll see the idea of lines of red brick dust at doorways. I'll use a pinch here and there at windows, the same way I'd use salt. And you can double those up. I've seen them used together successfully, or you can use either one alone. It works fine.
And also, I don't know if we've ever talked about red brick dust on the show yet, but it also is referred to as reddening. The reason for that being is because the particular dust that we're talking about is a type of brick that was made from clay, not the cement ones you can find now.
Right. You're not talking about dyed cement bricks. We're not talking about that kind of ground-up modern bricks. You're looking for older bricks that are made from baked clay. And this is a throwback to very, very African practices, the use of red clay and red ochre. They're not nearly as hard to find as you'd think. I've found them just randomly. Just walking around, you'll find chunks of red brick. If you live in a city, you'll find random chunks of red brick. If you find demolished buildings, you'll find old walls and chimneys. My wife found, a whole chimney full of a house that had fallen in. She was out on a geological dig and found an entire chimney that had fallen in. The house was like 200 years old. So just red brick for days. And she'd only bring one or two out for me, unfortunately, which is kind of sad. But
well, you know, she knows where to get more, I guess.
That's true.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Either you live in an area where the buildings are around you are old enough to have that kind of brick, or you're going to be kind of out of luck. But luckily, there's enough people out there that live in those areas. You can buy it for pretty cheap and
sure.
Have them send it to you.
Yeah, Lucky Mojo Curio Company, like everything else in the world, they offer red brick dust. And I believe that Joseph and Sarah Magnuson offer it through the Candlesmoke, their Candlesmoke Chapel store. I know back when they still lived in San Francisco, they were actually grinding the brick off of the house they lived
in. That's awesome.
So I don't know if they took a couple with them as mementos when they moved cross country, or if they found another source. But the redding they were selling before was actually being ground off of bricks from their house.
Awesome.
And it's not hard to do. I mean, the clay is fairly soft. When I find bricks, whole bricks, or chunks of bricks, I tend to break them up into manageable pieces with a hammer and then just rub the pieces together to kind of grind them up. And we'll take either sift them through a screen, or I'll take something and grind them down a little bit more if it needs to be to get it finer.
Yeah, if you're living in an area with older houses and you find that red brick, it's definitely different than the concrete ones you'll see. So
you can tell the difference. The modern bricks are very, very rough to the touch. The dyed concrete's very, very pebbly and coarse. And,
right.
I mean, clay bricks actually almost have kind of a satiny feel to them. They're very, very smooth. The pores are very small. It's not hard to tell the difference.
Right. With that, I guess we'll move to mirrors.
Mirrors. Mirrors are very, very handy. We did a whole show about mirrors. If you go back to episode one, we did a whole show about mirror boxes. Now they were used to contain things. They can also be used to repel things. And I think we mentioned that very briefly in that show. I think we talk about house mirrors a little bit in the Curio show. But we'll touch on it again because they are important parts of house protection.
Mm-hmm.
Small mirrors outside the house, dressed with things like firewall or just plain protection oil, again, depending on what you're into. I tend to go with firewall most of the time, but I'm a little over the top like that, I guess.
I tend to use reversing oil.
Reversing oil is good. Reversing oil is good. I like kind of like biting back, so I guess I'm just mean.
Yeah, well.
I favor the little automotive mirrors, the little fisheye mirrors you can get for your side mirrors for your car. They come with adhesive already attached to them, and they're kind of made to take weather. So you can just dress them with whatever kind of oil you like. You can put them wherever you want. You put on the outside walls of your house. Facing outwards, they repel things that come in.
Right. And you can find a lot of different types of these and where they have to be set. You can kind of put them wherever you need to. Some people will tell you they have to be able to be seen. Other people will tell you to hide them. So it's sort of a mixed bag of however you feel comfortable with it. Whatever, I guess, makes sense to you when you're doing it.
Sure. Most of what I've heard with that is just how obvious you want to be. You know, how much in your face you want to be about it. You can put them where they're very, very visible. You can put them down around your like shrub line, say if you got plant life around your house, or you can put them up under the eaves. That they're there is what's important. So they could be either outside. You can also have them inside by windows and things like that, and they serve a very similar function. You just want dressed mirrors. That you dress them, you pray over them. You set them to their purpose like you do anything else, and put them in place to repel bad things coming in. This can repel bad work being thrown for you. This can repel, you know, unkind spirits. You can repel lots of stuff.
Yeah, and you can, like you said, you can purpose them to a bunch of different things, and what types of oils and stuff you use can be made directly for that purpose.
Sure, and it comes down to the fact that lots of people work very differently. You've listened to Dean and I talk about work enough over the show. You see that he and I tend to work differently in spots. We do the same work. We learned it from a lot of the same places, but we have small differences in personality and the way we approach things. There's not necessarily, there are wrong ways to do things within the tradition. There are things that you can do. There are ways to do a thing that is not correct within the tradition, but there are a lot of correct ways to do it.
Yeah. So it's always something to keep in mind.
Yeah. There's very rarely just one way to do a thing.
Also, there's something to put out too, and we'll probably put this in the show notes as well. This show note page might be kind of thick. Sorry, Hob. There's a store that's kind of all over the place called Science and Surplus. American Science and Surplus specifically, and they sell all kinds of different mirrors, and they're very inexpensive, and they ship. So if you're looking for those mirrors that Hob is talking about, you can actually buy them by the box.
Excellent. I'm glad to know they're shipping. They're selling mail order and stuff. That's a great store. I mean, it's up in Dean's neighborhood when we go to the Chicago area. And it's one of those places I just adore. It's like the best in the world of a hardware store, an army surplus store, and a junk shop. They just have everything in the world. And to walk in there and you realize how much stuff there is and what you can do with it all. It's
right.
Really extraordinary.
It's nice to be able to find your bottles and mirrors and all that stuff all in one place. So
sure, out of season Halloween decorations, you know, nails, fasteners, electronics, components, whatever. I'm sure we can come up with uses for most of it. Rope and chain and cordage of all kinds. It's a neat place. We'll definitely let people know about it because it is a neat shop and I think people can appreciate it.
I actually just found there last time we went a chain that I could break by pulling it apart. So if I ever get into doing more hands-on on crossing work, I think that's going to come in handy.
Yeah, certainly. And not even for things like oil crafting and things, using the broken pieces of chain can be handy for certain things.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's finish our burying stuff. So we'll finish up with railroad spikes, which are one of my favorites, mm-hmm. mostly because the town that I live in is one of the railroad sort of capitals, I guess. We've got more track here than we have roads, it seems. So if you're in a place where you can get spikes, they're really easy to collect. Just, again, make sure that the ones that you are taking ethically and legally. Taking one off the side of a track is not necessarily illegal, but taking one out of the track absolutely is. Again, there's several people who will sell you the cast-off spikes if you're looking for them. You don't want to harvest them. That's totally fine. But what they are used for is what we call nailing something down. And primarily what this practice is for is if you are in threat of losing your house, or you feel like someone is trying to take your house from you, either a landlord who's being unfair or even, you know, the legal system through foreclosure and things, you can use these spikes to mitigate some of that, in which you would normally would take these spikes, go to the four corners of your property after you have dressed them and nail them in. Usually if you're going to dress them, you can dress them in some type of protection oil. If you are trying to keep your house from someone else, normally you would add some of your own urine to that mixture as well.
It always seems to default to bodily fluids with us. I know. We're not just making this stuff up, I promise. It's traditional practice. The use of urine in this way, it's also used in a lot of floor washes for drawing in business and things like that. You're marking territory. I mean,
right.
It's very, very primal behavior. You mark what's yours.
Yeah, and with that, too, the suggestion is that if you're going to use urine, that you use the strongest urine, which
right.
is the first of the morning.
First wee of the day. usually it's collected without speaking. usually you'll get up without talking to anybody in the morning and collect the first of the day. And that's used, again, anytime you use it, if you use it for a floor wash, using it to address these spikes or anything else, you'll use that first of the day when it's most concentrated.
And you, it does not take a lot. So.
No. It goes a long way. Some people are a little squeamish about the bodily fluids. You can substitute ammonia. Especially you'll find things like buffalo ammonia, which is a lemon ammonia, being substituted for urine. I don't think it's quite as effective, but it does give you an alternative.
Yeah. When it comes down to it, if you want your house bad enough, if you're really, really interested in keeping it, then I suggest going full tilt on it.
Yeah, and look at it this way. At least it's your pee. It's not like you're going to play with anybody else's.
Right, unless you do this work for clients.
Yeah, well, you know, that's... You do what you got to do.
Yeah, but with it, I have done this kind of work with clients, and it's really, really effective.
Yes, I've not done as many as you have. I know you've done several. I've had the chance to do a few of these, and just the feeling you get when these are set is pretty extraordinary. And you get a very, very stable, grounded feeling around the property once they're set like that.
Yep, and it helps, too, with a lot of people who are going through foreclosures that are really trying to fight it, that when you set these up, you know, you're driving them into the ground with the passion required to keep your house. And so you'll see people get really, really into it, just wailing away on these things.
Oh, yeah, you'll see the calmest, most tranquil people in the world get really vicious on the other end of the hammer when they're setting these things. It's neat the way it takes hold of them. To see how they feel about it.
Those are the kind of people, too, where you have some really spectacular results.
We certainly cannot, your mileage may vary, we cannot guarantee your results, but we can certainly speak from the experience we've had that it seems to be very, very effective.
Right. So that's always the rub. What it did for someone else, it may not do for you, but it's always worth trying.
That's right.
So, all right, that sort of covers the things that, some of the things, you know, we could go on and on. In particular, putting together bottle spells to be buried and that sort of thing, maybe a different show. But these are a lot of more specific things that can be done in and around your house. So with that, we'll move on to the porch.
Porch is liminal space. It's sort of the first transitional space between outside and inside. You're definitely not in the yard anymore, but you're not in the house. And this is a space where you can deploy lots of things. You can certainly spread powders here. I've seen people spread powders and walk them into their welcome mat to affect visitors or guests. You can dress the front doorknob to affect people coming into the home. Charms placed above doors. This is where a lot of times people see things like horseshoes placed. Porches, it's mostly along the East Coast in the South, but I have seen them here in Tennessee where I'm at. You'll see people who paint the inside of their porch roof paint blue. That's a very, very particular color. It's a sort of pale blue you'll see. And when I was a kid, people told me they did it to keep wasps from building nests in the porch eaves.
And I've heard that quite a few times, too. I don't know anyone who actually has a haint blue porch, but I would be really interested to know if that's effective, or if it was just sort of a, well, we use it to keep ghosts away, but we don't want you to think that we should be locked up, so it keeps wasps away. That's
well, I've heard people swear by it that it does work that way. It does work to keep wasps from building. The theory is that it keeps wasps from building because they think the porch is the open sky. So it's not a safe place to build, whether it works or not. I've heard people swear that it does, but this is sort of, it may be either a situation of parallel evolution of a practice where it was done for two different things, really for two completely different reasons. Or like you said, someone trying to not talk about why they did it and it carried on that way.
Why does grandma cut the ends off the ham?
Right. So it's just a question of if somebody blowing smoke up somebody else's chimney and it got carried on as lore, or if it is something other people did for different reasons. You will often find the undersides of porch roofs painted this color. You'll find window sills and shutters painted this color. It's called haint blue because it's meant to repel the haints. It's meant to keep out either unfriendly spirits or hag-riding witches.
Which, was significantly more of interest to people back in the day, especially again in the South where you had people who were around huge battlefields and things where they were really, really worried about spirits coming back. Or
sure.
They knew a ton of people that didn't come back.
Right, or they're just people who found themselves in a situation where they might draw undue attention. Because, I mean, I know we've had this talk before when you first started doing the work. You just couldn't believe what people would do to each other.
That's true.
That's never stopped. But back in the day, people were more open to it because they saw it more often. People practiced more for themselves, and people were less concerned about keeping up certain appearances because they were... This was not as uncommon. It was not as kept under tow. You know, it was more out in the open a lot of the time. So you had a lot of people who would have, say, a witch come looking for them, or they'd have a bad spirit come looking for them. And this practice has just got to the point where you might have a house that had been in the family for a few generations, and having these basic protections in place for just something you did.
And that's one of those things that, you know, hopefully people were just sort of picking up as time went along, and, you know, dad painted it this color, so I'm going to keep it that way, that kind of generational thing.
Like I said, deer, as I can tell, it's really, really common along the East Coast. I think it may have been one of those practices you find from the Gullah folk in the Carolinas. I have seen it. It has come at least as far in as where I'm at, because I've seen it in houses in Mississippi. I've seen it in houses in Tennessee, and I've seen it in houses in Louisiana for sure. So
we'll have to look for that when we're in the NOLA thing, because I've actually never seen a porch painted that color.
If I can remember where one is in the area where I live at, I'll certainly take you by and so you can see one while you're
excellent
around. Sherman Williams actually maintains a really, really good website talking about Haint Blue, which I thought was interesting. We'll link to that in the show notes. It was not what I expected to find when I went to find an example of a color to show somebody.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've showed that to a couple of painters that I know, and you know they're shocked because the company they work for. And
sure.
Like, so never heard of that.
So hats off to Sherman Williams for maintaining a little bit of folklore.
Yeah, that's excellent. And, you know, it sort of shows you too that there's a lot of these practices that may be kind of weird, but at the same point, you might be surprised how mainstream it is in some places.
I mean, it's people are interested in where things come from. And like you said, you see, when I was a kid, I'm seeing houses with these porches painted, their shutters painted, and you wonder why. And some people tell you and some people won't. It just depends on how they feel about sort of getting into that stuff. Because some people, it's like what you found, what happened with the Pennsylvania Dutch, where the state decided to stamp out, you know, what they saw as rampant superstition. So a lot of traditions were lost, a lot of traditions were covered up, and that kind of thing happens occasionally. And it's very sad how much stuff is lost that way.
Which is, you know, a good reason why to seek out this kind of knowledge before it disappears entirely, and at least hopefully have some record, even if it's just us talking about it.
Absolutely, and don't for people listening who are interested in this sort of thing, don't neglect your elders. If you have elders in the family who have this kind of information, take the time to talk to them, take the time to learn from them, because they may be taking something with them that no one else knows.
You'd be surprised, too, when you go to talk to people about this kind of thing. You know, they may not call it folk magic. They, you know, unless they're African-American, they probably will not call it hoodoo. But you'd be surprised how people know just little tiny things. And it's hard to kind of steer the conversation in that if you're hoping to ask for it. But, you know, you'll find people who are, they have no real connection to the work, per se. But then you start to talk to them and they go, oh, well, yeah, you know, you shouldn't brush under people's feet. And if we have this problem, we would take a bath with these types of things. And they don't really have a name for it. It's just stuff they do.
Right. This is one of the more interesting assignments you actually get handed to you when you take the Lucky Mojo correspondence course, is that you have to contact someone in your family, talk to someone in your family about some superstitions or practices or traditions that they had. And you may think that there's no magic in your family. You may think your family is completely honest, church-going people. Ask them about things they did. Ask them, you'll be amazed at what they will bring you and what they will hand you.
It definitely shocked me, especially going into the Lithuanian side, that there's apparently a good deal of folk magic there, and I had no idea.
Well, sure, man. Eastern Europe just lousy with that stuff.
Yeah, can't go anywhere without tripping over it, apparently.
Well, I mean, you're in a culture that was really concerned about, you know, being eaten by things all the time, so you tend to develop a lot of folklore in places like that.
Right. All right, well, since we're venturing off topic, we should get back to the porch. So, we talked about Haint Blue, definitely a cool thing to check out. Like I said, we'll link to the show notes for sure with the Sherwin Williams thing, because that's just classic. I love it. Couldn't get enough.
Yeah,
the one thing to talk about the porch a little bit is that, as Hobbit said, it's a liminal space, and really, back in the day, if and you know even today, if you have people that normally come through your front door and you have a porch, this is a place that everyone passes through. It's your chance to interact with them spiritually, so to speak, before anything else happens. So you can lay down all kinds of your powders you talked about, and also washes, because that used to be a huge thing that I know a couple of people still do. I know Corey actually wrote a blog post about him using Chinese wash to wash out his porch before he would lay down things like money draw oils or powders to bring that type of energy to him and wash away anything that he didn't want. So with this, you can definitely spend some time on your porch. It's not a bad idea to set up a pattern to how you do this if you're going to be doing it every quarter, you know, but again, make sure that you need to bear in mind that if you're going to be using washes, to be careful about doing that sort of thing when it could freeze. otherwise, definitely take up that practice if you're interested in trying it. It will make, I think, a big difference at least.
Sure, and there's washes for all kinds of things. Like I said, just besides just purifying, you can use washes to bring in money to the house. You can use washes to attract, you know, visitors to certain cons. If you're looking for a new man or lady friend, you can certainly use things you can use to draw people in. You can bury things underneath the porch, of course, like we talked about before, planting charms underneath for people to walk over. It gives you a lot of avail. If you have a porch, I live in an apartment, for instance, so I'm bereft of these things currently. But it's gives you a lot of opportunities to prepare things, either beneficial or protective.
On that note, too, when people were getting into these types of conflicts and things, they would use the porch as sort of a place to deploy a lot of nastier tricks. Oh, so sure. It was a place you wanted to keep pretty well clean because you were never really sure if somebody came and, you know, powdered or dusted your door or welcome mat and things. So that's primarily, I imagine, where that, you know, cleansing the porch came from. We'll let Hob take it away with what you should do should you find, you know, a bottle of rusty water with a bunch of grime in it thrown against your front door.
Dr. E, I heard talk about this the first time, that there's a practice in traditional Cuban practice of throwing water out of your front door in the morning, and that comes back to sort of the African, the Congolese tradition of how people would throw on your porch to curse you through your feet. So this is a kind of place where people would deploy subtle or unsubtle attacks against you, and you see things. When done well, the distribution of powders, and of course if you keep your porch clean, any dirt kind of thing on your porch is obvious. You'll notice something laying there because we tend to mix our powders with local dirt so they don't stand out. It just looks like somebody tracks something on. If you keep your porch clean, you'll know there's something there that doesn't belong.
Right.
Things like war water, which is what Dean was referencing, or some of the nastier egg spells especially come to mind, where you'd load an egg with something and throw it at their door. War water is the same way. It's a bottle, rusty water, among other things, iron, Spanish moss is not uncommon to that, and some other things. This is like a magical hand grenade. It's like a magical Molotov. And you'll actually throw the whole bottle at their door. And not only are you cursing them, but you're leaving a very unpleasant mess of broken glass and rusty metal and whatnot for them to have to clean up. Just bad news all around. The one thing you don't want to do with these kinds of things is ignore them.
Right.
You don't want to just leave them there for whatever reason. If you keep your porch clean, you think someone's throwing powders for you, you've obviously have something like an egg thrown at your door that, you know, looks even just an egg, or if it looks fouler than just an egg thrown at your door, or something like the war water. You definitely want to address this. Things like Jinx Killer, sachet powders you'll find used for this. You can throw over them immediately. If you fear someone's throwing for you regularly, doing something like putting salt and black pepper and maybe a mix of something like fear not to tread over evil powder in your shoes can keep you from being poisoned through the feet. The silver anklets we talked about, the silver diamond and devil shoestring anklets we mentioned before, that's if you think you're under consistent attack. If you find the mess, you're going to want to clean the mess. You're going to want to put together some kind of cleansing wash to take care of this.
Lemon is your friend.
Lemon or pine tend to be the two main families of cleaning herbs we use in this tradition. Old pine salt, I've heard pine salt, straight up pine salt cleaner being used very successfully for spiritual cleaning because of that really, really strong resinous smell. People tend to drift one way or the other towards either the lemon family, citrus family of cleaners, or the pine family of cleaners.
I am more of a lemon man myself.
Yeah, I am too. I tend to lean towards the lemony stuff. I like Van, I like Chinese wash a lot. But if you find a mess like this, you do want to clean up the physical remains of it and dispose of it off your property as quickly as possible. Do not just put it in your trash and leave it. You want to get it off your property as soon as possible.
Right.
And then you're going to want to either get some Chinese wash. I mean, things like Chinese wash, holy water, rue or agrimony, I mean, something pretty, pretty beefy. You're going to want to mix together a wash and really scrub down the area where you found it and then lay down. Make sure you renew your protections at that point. You'll put down fresh salt, put down fresh redding, whatever it is you need to do to remove this from the space.
If you're going to, when you deploy it or get rid of it off of your property to running water or crossroads, if you're going to do any of these things to dispose of that trick, make sure that you're paying either the spirit of that river or the spirit of that crossroads to take that crap away from you.
Sure. I mean, that's a practice I've fallen into that I'm very, very fond of. It just seems like a good idea to me to pay for services rendered.
Right. Well, the other thing to think about, too, depending on if this person is particularly skilled or not, is that more than likely they have paid a spirit very similarly to deploy that work. If I'm going to get rid of something like that, I will pay whichever spirit I'm doing it double.
That's a good way of looking at it.
So, you know, normally you would leave 3 pennies, 3 dimes, whatever like that. I'll leave 6 or 9 and just say, look, I know somebody may have paid you to do this, but I am more generous than they are. So you should help me instead of that person, and we'll leave it at that.
Hopefully you won't find yourself in this kind of position, because if somebody's throwing World War IV, it's a good chance you're in for a fight.
Right.
Hopefully you can avoid that sort of thing.
If somebody is throwing war water for you, the other thing you need to kind of realize, too, is that that's possibly crossed into a barrier where that person may become physically violent. There's a lot of stuff people will do because they think they can hide behind anonymity. The moment somebody has thrown something like that at your front door, you can assume that they're probably in the state that they're willing to do you physical harm. Call the police.
Sure. If someone's to a point where they're going to break out and throw war water at you, yeah, you're probably sliding on into restraining order territory.
Right. So, you know, just kind of keep that stuff in mind. It is very good to do spiritual work. It will help you in the long run, but you need to make sure that you are, you know, physically safe so that you have time to do that kind of work.
There's a chance if you're fixing a lot of people's problems, you're going to step on somebody's toes somewhere. And that's really why we kind of talk about this sort of thing. You know, be prepared to have protections in place. It's not a bad idea if you're doing work in general. It's not a bad idea at all. I mean, just being in contact with the world, having protections in place isn't a bad idea. but being able to have some, especially if you're a worker, to have some pretty solid protections in place and know how to cleanse things, know how to take care of messes.
Right. If I could give a piece of advice on that, it should be the first thing you learn how to do. Is take stuff off of you and get yourself walled away. Because for the most part, if you are spiritually clean and you know, you're not kind of going out on a social level and being a total asshole, then for the most part, life is going to treat you pretty well. If you're not in the best position, things are going to be hard kind of no matter what until you get that junk off of you.
Right. And I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Spiritual cleaning and cleansings and cleaning is a fundamental practice. It's not a difficult practice most of the time. It's not hard to learn. And just something as simple as a normal routine of bathing could save you a lot of headache.
Yes, it can. It's amazing how much, how different you can make your life, especially if you've never done it, how fast you can get results from that. I see that constantly with clients that come in that are all crossed up.
People that have been carrying stuff around for years without realizing it, and they just don't have the information they need to know how to take it off. And something as simple as, you know, just a hyssop bath or something as simple as a 3-ingredient bath can take a lot of grief off of them. And it's just like having a millstone lifted off of their shoulders. It's really, really amazing.
Check out episode 2 if you have not given it a try. You know, we both recommend it.
Mm-hmm. One last anachronism to mention outside the house. Back in the day, the idea of keeping a frizzled black hen in your yard.
Oh, yeah.
The frizzled black hens in the yard was a very, very common. People had chickens, and these particular hens were thought to peck up messes. They were taught to peck up and to dispose of messes that were buried. If someone buried roots in your yard or deployed things in your yard, these hens would find them and dispose of them for you. So that's the kind of thing you'd see in a lot of old time. And I want to say that the Lucky Mojo Curio Company actually has frizzled hens on their property.
Yeah, I think I've heard that too, which to me is totally awesome.
Because I believe Miss Cat was actually offering to send black frizzled chicks to students who were interested a while back.
Oh, wow.
So it's a shame I don't have a yard, or I would have totally taken her up on that.
You got to put it on your roof, man.
Yeah.
All right, well, so I think that about covers the outside. Yep. Let's talk about doors.
Doors are spaces you want to keep clean. Doors are spaces you want to keep clean and protected. These are transitional spaces. Even if they're inside the house, they're still transitional spaces. And transitional spaces are things you need to be cautious with because if it's a space something moves through, it's a space that anything can move through if left unprotected.
It's a way of getting in and out. And again, you know, when we're talking about doors too, sort of the same rules apply for windows.
Yes.
I consider doors to be significantly more of a point of interest than a window, per se, because you have, you know, physical people coming through it a lot as well. But usually the same charms that you can put on a door, you can also find on windows.
Yeah. And really, where you have thresholds, and even potential thresholds, like I tend to focus on corners a lot when I clean houses, where two walls join, or where the walls join the floor or ceiling. These are really spaces when you clean, when you do a house clean, and I don't mean, you know, I mean a spiritual house clean. When you wipe, when you do go over your house, say with Chinese wash and whatever else, pay special attention to windowsills, pay special attention to door frames. Like I said, I tend to sprinkle things in corners too, a few drops in the corners. But these are transitional spaces, and these are spaces you need that can be spiritually active. So make sure you wipe down your doors, make sure you wipe down your doorways, wipe down your windowsills.
But for things that you can put on your door, some of the most common things you'll find are mojo bags that are loaded for protective uses. You can also find them loaded for things like drawing in money or just prosperity in general.
Mm-hmm. Protective charms, things like the bat nut we mentioned before in the Curio show, usually be deployed over doors or other kind of protective guardians or kind of scary protective things. And when you look at things like the Pennsylvania Dutch, the powwow tradition, you'll find written charms that are either put into the door frame because they were crafty that way, or even paper charms that will be folded either in or out of bags. Either way, they're done and put above doors.
As well, it's a place that you'll find people who put evil eye charms.
Sure, big hanging Hansa hands, or you'll find mirrors also that'll be hung near doors to serve some of our purposes we mentioned before.
And I know for those of you who listen to the Lucky Mojo Rootwork Hour, they talk a lot about putting a mirror right in your entryway, so someone who comes through has to see that mirror when you walk through, and they will load that mirror by putting things behind it, either really small mojo bags or even dressing the mirror specifically so that if someone's bringing something into your house, they sort of have to deal with it first.
Right. So if someone's coming in there loaded with ill intentions, you know, they're gonna catch that right in the face when they come in the door.
Yeah. I gotta get me one of the mirrors when I find a different place. Nice 4-foot by 3-foot mirror. Oh, that's fucking weird. What do you got that for? Don't worry about it. Wipe your feet.
Well, you know, I know what you gotta do.
Yeah. I know a lot of other different cultures, and I can't really speak too much about it other than I know some people that are in it will also keep things like certain scriptures above it or an entire very small Torah.
Oh, sure. The Jewish with the little I just forgot the mezuzahs.
Yeah, I think it's pronounced mezuzahs, but if you're Jewish and we murdered your language, we apologize.
I'm very sorry. Working from memory, it's been a while since I've seen the word. But yeah, the little prayer boxes, sort of prayer boxes or prayer containers that hold them. That people will nail up on doorposts. Very, very old tradition.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff. Again, if you're really interested in looking up door charms, there is a ton in the Jewish folk tradition, and they each are for different types of spirits to be kept out and that sort of thing. It's really cool. I just started getting into it. So
this is a very small example of how much information there is that we can't even begin to approach. One, because it's really outside the scope of the show. Though some of us come into hoodoo, it's not really what we're talking about. And two, just because of how big the subject is just of this alone.
Right. When it comes down to it, you know, there's a little bit from a lot of different traditions that make up hoodoo, and you'll find people who dig a little bit more into it, and then it's not really in that collection of things that we call hoodoo, but, you know, it's cool to do the research and to see how many other cultures have been doing things very similarly for a long time.
Sure, and it's like we talked about before, hoodoo is it's primarily an African-American system, but it is an American system, so it's an amalgamation of all the cultures that make up this place, make up this country, and practitioners who are more from one culture or the other can pick up other family lore that comes into that. You know, a practitioner in the Appalachians or in Pennsylvania might have more German folklore in there. They might have more ceremonial magic involved in it, whereas someone from down here in my territory, you might have more French influence, more Spanish influence, more African influence. You have a lot of very strong similarities, strong foundation practices are done very similarly everywhere, but you'll find where the cultures are most dominant in those places will have influenced it to a certain...
But it's definitely out there if you want to find it. You'd be surprised how easy a lot of that information is to get a hold of, especially if it's if you are from the area you're trying to look for or look into.
Right, and this comes back to what we said earlier. Talk to people that are older than you.
You'd be shocked to see the kind of things or to hear the kind of things people had been doing, and it'll just blow you away. With that, though, we can move on to the types of things that you could do in your home to make things a little bit easier. A couple of the things that we wanted to touch on that's sort of a bigger overarching thing that we make, you know, come back to in more detail later is a prosperity or money altar.
Yep. This is a space in your house set aside for drawing money into the house, for drawing prosperity and wealth into the house. One of the best things you can do for this, as far as a central piece, is to get you a nice big chunk of lodestone and turn it.
And lodestones come in a bunch of different sizes. You can confine them to what's called grit, all the way up to specimen size, which is as big as you can afford, really.
Really, I mean, the price is really the only limiting factor on finding lodestones. You can get them as big as your head or bigger without trying real hard. They're not cheap necessarily, because finding solid pieces that size and shipping them, of course, if you're able to buy them from somewhere else, can be taxing. Lodestones is a naturally occurring magnet. This is iron ore that usually has been magnetized a lot of times because it was exposed and struck by lightning. Is the most common way that they're magnetized, which goes into a whole wide, I mean, realm of folklore, why they'd be powerful, besides the magnetism, the fact that this energy sort of comes from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Even a tiny little lodestone can be used for drawing. Even a frugal one, you can get one slightly smaller than your fist or about that size for really not terribly expensive, and that's a good size to use for an altar if you don't need something like a bowling ball.
And you can get a lot of different choices if you go to certain places. There's a lot of places that specifically deal with stones. I'm trying to think of one of them around here was called Black Market Minerals, I think, which is apparently some bigger chain. But they have all kinds of stuff. You want pyrite the size of your fist, they can get it to you. But the thing is if you can actually go into the store to see these things and you get to choose from a different or a wide variety, most of the time, just because these stones are next to each other and they're banging into each other, there'll be small pieces that'll stick to them. If you're going to be able to hand select one, find one that actually does have a strong magnetic pull. Just because it's gigantic doesn't necessarily mean that it has that kind of pull.
Right. No,
you can get ones that are huge that are dead.
Yeah, no, you want good, strong lodestones. Lodestones are commonly used for love work, paired lodestones. Lodestones can be gendered, male or female, or they can be neutral in gender. So they can be used for love work that way. But for money drawing, you really just need one good-sized lodestone. And a lodestone, you're going to train it. It's like a little pet. It's a lot like the way you treat a mojo bag. You have to feed it. You have to care for it. You have to talk to it. You have to tell it what it's supposed to be doing.
And then usually you would leave money in or around it that it would be able to then know that's what it needs to draw. A good deal of those instructions are available at Lucky Mojo site. I think the website is luckymojo.com/lodestone.html.
Yeah, I'll put it over in the show notes. We can certainly get into more of the detail. It's really exhaustively discussed there. So rather than rehashing, we would encourage you to check that out. Fundamentally, like Dean said, you're going to train it. You're going to create what's called hunting money. You're going to use this lodestone to train money that you take out of your pocket, and then you'll take that money and use it for things. And as it goes out in the world, it'll help bring more back. It'll kind of home back in on this lodestone, which is sort of home base. And having the lodestone there and being cared for, it's fed with iron filings, which is called
magnetic sand or anvil dust.
Yeah, magnetic sand or anvil dust type things you'll feed it with, and it's usually will be washed occasionally, normally in whiskey. It'll be washed, and you'll start over feeding it again.
Right, and that is to say as well, magnetic sand and anvil dust are two different things. Mm-hmm. If you can actually find someone who is doing some type of blacksmithing and you can collect that dust, a lot of people will say that's significantly more potent than just finding magnetic sand.
Sure, because both it comes from work and the fact there's some energy involved, just the idea of it being knocked off in work as opposed to just ferrous sand.
Also, if you're going to be setting up this money altar, things like they have large pieces of pyrite that you can get that you can set out, which is another good curio to draw quick money. I know a lot of people will write petitions out on these pads of paper they look like $100 bills.
Mm-hmm. You'll find you'll find altar cloths that are patterned with $100 bills that are used for that same purpose.
And if you're going to be working this and you need something specific, make sure to be specific. Don't say, I have enough money for this. Say, I need money for this. Say, I need money to pay this bill. I need money to afford this car, etc.
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask for what you need, and don't be afraid to be specific.
So, just sort of general money work advice.
Money is something most people will need. Those of us, congratulations if you don't. You're doing better than the rest of us for the most part. It's something that's always kind of there. It's something that always kind of hangs over your head. Money work is something that can be very, very, it's obviously it can be very, very beneficial. And it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to get started doing it.
And if money is not an issue, you can email me and Hob and we'll be free to do whatever work you need. But the other thing away from the money altar that we can get into as well is something that I've just started using quite a bit, which is peace water. It was a little bit hard to get where I was at the moment just because we were having trouble getting shipping stuff resolved. But anyway, now that we have it, I've actually been using it quite a bit. It's a two-part wash usually, alcohol and something else. When you get in, it's been sitting for a while, you'll see it become two distinct parts, one that's sort of real light blue, another part that's really dark blue. They'll sit on top of each other. And what you do with this is that you would take that bottle and just shake the bejesus out of it until it becomes more of a mixture of those two colors. And if you have someone who is going through some kind of rough times where there's a lot of conflict in their house, kids that are kind of being nasty, or spouses that are just sort of out for blood, you can take this peace water and sprinkle it around your house, and in general things will start to calm down a bit. Definitely good for people who are having a lot of marital problems, for that seems to occur mostly in arguments.
Sure. Peace water can be used. It can be essentially used outside of the home, of course. It's good for using at work, too. But for use in the house, any kind of time there's any sort of domestic upheaval, peace water is a really, really good way to treat that. Just like you said, you shake it up till it's homogenous, sprinkle it in the corners, sprinkle it in the bathroom where people will walk over it, just kind of spread it around. You know, you can, it's not hard to use, and it's very, very pleasant smelling when you get it open, and it can work wonders.
Yeah. But again, definitely make sure to shake it, and you can even use like spritzer bottles and things for it. As it is partly alcohol based, it tends to evaporate, and then it's very pleasant smelling when it is doing so. So it's kind of nice to sort of scent your house with peace.
Mm-hmm. It's understated. It's not real obvious. Since it is alcohol-based, you do want to be careful. Some furniture won't stand up to alcohol, even light alcohol, very well. So be aware of that as you're working around, but it's not really a hazardous sort of thing. There's like not all the, I've used it a lot. I've used it extensively in a lot of different spaces, a lot of different client work, a lot of different house cleans and stuff. I tend to go around, again, in corners. I tend to hit corners with peace water a lot, and I've never had a problem with that. Anywhere I've used it.
Definitely good stuff, and there's a lot of people who ask for peaceful home kind of work, and this is by far one of the most or more effective ones, and the easiest to deploy.
Sure. You will find peaceful home oils and candles and that sorts of things, those types of products, bath crystals, sachet powders are readily available for most providers. You can add stuff you can add to wash water if you're doing a house cleaning, or stuff that can be added to your laundry, stuff that can be added to mop water for regular actual physical cleaning. These are all options you can do, things you can lay inside the house. Keeping peace inside the house or things like that, laundry tricks are a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Dressing the sheets, dressing people's socks and underwear, keeping people, you know, cast off evil. Someone's picking up bad habits or hanging out with the wrong crowd, peaceful home, someone's got a bad attitude, or there's some domestic tension. Even things like money draw or attraction stuff you can put into people to help them find a job, you know, money getting stuff. If you're doing work in the house, you're not necessarily going to, not everyone necessarily going to be complicit to the work. Sometimes you have to kind of do what you got to do. That comes into magical cooking, which I'm sure we could do, probably will do an entire show. We'll see who we can get for a guest for that.
Great. Now everybody's going to know I can't cook worth a damn.
Well, I can, so you can organize and we'll discuss it.
Yeah, you can cook well enough to make up for me not being able to cook at all.
Magical cooking is something that we could definitely talk about and something you can think of in the house, because there's a lot of things you can do out of your spice cabinet.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I could learn how to do anything when it comes to that. Yeah, the problem with magical cooking is when you're done, you generally have to want to eat what you made.
That's true. It's hard to deploy something you've cooked for someone. They can't get inside of it. That'd be bad.
So. Right. Going back to the cast off evil and stuff, I've had a couple of clients after I make them up powders and oils and things, that one of their favorite things to do is to sometimes certain shoes you can lift the sole out, especially if someone has inserts of a shoe, and they could just, they sprinkle that in there, it stays in there for months. Very effective. Otherwise, what they've also told me is that when I've put together crystals and stuff for them, they will wash just socks, so that everyone that they want to affect with these particular workings, again, almost exclusively cast off evil and peaceful home, they will, you know, sort of hit everyone in the foot all at the same time.
Sure. No, absolutely. Especially peaceful home type stuff. If you have a family that's just at each other's throat all the time, you know, if dinner is like a demolition derby, that sort of thing is great. Just, you know, get everyone's socks and underwear and hit them with that and just turn it loose on everybody all at the same time. And just so everybody can just chill out a little bit.
Yeah. I also heard that it's helpful for people that have nervous disorders and things like that, where they're constantly worrying or whatnot, that sometimes by dressing their clothes with more calming herbs and cooling herbs, it's been able to help them deal with certain things a little bit easier.
Sure. And you also use things like clarity products, you know, things like King Solomon's Wisdom, basil, things like that that just naturally have sort of a calming clarity.
Yep.
to kind of help people with their anxiety or tensions.
Yeah, and do not be afraid to mix those if, you know, it calls for more than one.
Absolutely. Just, you know, you don't have to go buck wild. You don't have to throw the whole spice cabinet or the whole oil rack or whatever, but you can certainly mix and match to fit the circumstance. And that's really coming back to a culinary analogy. Sometimes it takes a pinch of this and a pinch of that. You have to kind of approach each situation individually as a unique situation and deal with it as it calls for.
Totally behind that. So, for our last bit, since this is going to be a long show for you guys, so that's kind of exciting. It's going to be a lot to edit, but we'll get through it. Planting specific plants, keeping these things at your house or at your front door.
Sure.
We'll let you finish up with that.
Okay. Well, we talked a little bit about culinary spices already as far as using things you have in your cabinet. You can keep live plants around. We talked about deploying things in potted plants, and there are spells that you can build, especially fidelity spells and things you can build inside potted plants, and as they grow, the spell continues to work. But just having certain kinds of plants around could be beneficial. Having things like rosemary planted, especially if you're the wife of the house, lady of the house, rosemary planted in your garden or planted inside the house, say in an herb box, window box or something like that, or pots in the house. Rosemary is a very strong female guide. It tends to put the woman back in control of the house in a good way. It gives her the reins to run things. It's good for a strong woman. Rue is excellent for protection to have around. Keeps the evil eye off, can keep unfriendly things away. Things like basil is old saying that evil cannot dwell where basil has been. So just having basil growing, say in your front garden or around your house or inside, again, can just having it there can be beneficial to keeping things out. We're used to working with dried herbs a lot of the times in this tradition because that's just where the tradition comes from a lot of the times. Don't overlook the advantages of having fresh plants around. Plants are spirits, and being able to cultivate, and especially if you grow these things up, if you have a relationship with them from seed to growth, the spirits of these things can be very, very powerful allies, very, very friendly, very, very beneficial guardians to your home.
And if you're going to be growing these things too, you need to bear in mind that some of these plants, especially rue, when it is fresh versus after it's been dried and cut and sifted, will have slightly different properties. So be careful when touching your rue plant, for instance, barehanded.
Do be aware of certain plants. I think I want to say mugwort can be offensive to some people when it's harvested or when it's fresh. Do some research if you're going to be, just like any other gardening, if you're going to get into herb gardening, you know what you're dealing with, know how to approach it, and be aware of any allergies or conditions you may have that could be affected by it.
Right. Right, because there's, you know, again, it's different to when you're handling the live plant.
Well, it's like nettles. You know, you work with nettles. They're called stinging nettles for a reason.
Right.
You get a hold of stinging nettles when they're fresh, and they will light you up, but they don't do that when they're dried. You know, just like anything else, do not approach this half-cocked. You know, educate yourself. Be aware of what you're doing. It's not complicated to find out about these things. We have access to pretty much unlimited information these days. Just take the time to do it.
Well, since we're doing an extra long show, it seems like we will not have a secondhand hoodoo with this particular segment. Otherwise, we will take this episode into about 2 hours. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Again, unfortunately, most of the topics we've touched on lately, and this is really just scratching the surface. It's kind of a whirlwind tour. What these kinds of episodes do is allow us to touch on a lot of information to give all of you an idea of where we're coming from, what we're talking about, and it gives us a toehold into larger topics that we can expand on later. So if you're hearing these and there are specific things that stand out that you're interested in, do let us know.
Right. If we get requests for things, we'll definitely set aside some time to write up an episode on it. And like you said, we're skimming a lot of this, but it should be a good deal of information for you to be able to make some changes to your household or be able to put in new protections that you may not have thought about or even knew about. So always bear that in mind, but there's definitely more to come. We just have to decide where we want to go next.
Yeah, we're trying to cover a broad base to begin with, and once we have that laid down, it gives us a lot more freedom. You guys know what we're talking about. You have an understanding. If you didn't already, you have an understanding of some basics of the tradition. And once that foundation's laid, it's much, much easier for us to go into a more detailed topic, especially once we get guests on the show, people who are willing, who are able to talk about these things, maybe from more experience than we have, who can really, really educate. We can get into the finer nuts and bolts of specific parts of the tradition.
Right. So, with that, I guess that's all we got for today. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Lamplighter Blues. Our show can be found at iTunes and lamplighterblues.wordpress.com.
You can also reach us via Twitter at lamplighterblue, that's with no S, or at lamplighterblues@gmail.com. Until next time.
Don't put that bang on me. Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to Tennessee.